Word of mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. There's a lot of pressure on a wedding photographer. After all the expense and attention to planning the day, the photographer is charged with capturing the fleeting expressions, the flattering angles, the happy guests, and making images that reinforce the indisputable rightness of a couple's decision to unite. But it's just the beginning of a union. Only when the guests have gone home and the camera's been put away does a marriage begin in earnest. Matt Mendelson is a writer and professional photographer of more than 450 weddings since 1999. He explores the meaning of marriage by reconnecting with five couples whose weddings he photographed years before to find out whether their relationships have grown, evolved, or ended. He wrote about the experience in a long-form article for The Washingtonian. And Matt, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, your article, you say that you're less interested in wedding photography as you are by wedding anthropology. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, before I was a wedding photographer or during the early days, I was a journalist. I've always been a journalist slash wedding photographer. And I don't know, I've always wanted to take a look sort of beyond the normal puffery of weddings and all things bridal. And I think the journalist in me always wanted to sort of go beyond that, you know, silliness, what I always refer to as the your day-ness. Everything is, oh, it's your day, all these bridal magazines telling couples and specifically brides that it's all about, you know, one day. And I just thought, wouldn't it be interesting if you actually sort of went a little deeper than that?
Yeah, you did write a really searching piece on going back and finding these couples that you had photographed years before. First, what were you looking to find, do you think?
I don't know. You know, it started in a bizarre way. It started years ago. I went outside to get the Washington Post, back when you actually read the hard copy. And I went outside and I came in with the Post and I sat on my bed and I pulled out the Metro section. And there was a headline in the Metro section that read, "Prominent Bethesda physician, comma, wife, arrested in DEA drug raid." And I looked at the mugshot that went with the story, and I said to my wife, "Oh, my God, I shot their wedding." And at that point, I knew there was something, you know, interesting. It sort of planted a seed in my head. And then just a couple of weeks after that, I went to the hospital near my house to photograph Kat Valcourt and her new baby. I had shot her wedding back in 2001, and I photographed her first pregnancy and then her, you know, the happy delivery and all of that stuff. And then I photographed her second pregnancy. But when I went to the hospital to shoot Larry and Kat with the new baby, the baby had already been whisked to Children's Hospital. And so Kat was sitting there in a hospital bed by herself. And I said, you know, "Kat, is there anything I can do?" And she said, "Would you mind running this breast milk over to Children's Hospital?" And so I got a little vial and they put it in a cooler for me. And it was early on a weekend morning. And I was stopped at a red light and I looked at the vial of breast milk and I sort of laughed to myself. I mean, not laughing at the seriousness of the situation, but I just thought, what wedding photographer is ferrying vials of breast milk 10 years after the wedding? And so coupled with the other thing, at that point, I knew there was a story to be told.
Kat and Larry, whose wedding you photographed back in 2001, have had a pretty rough time of it in some respects, but yet have one of the strongest marriages of any of the couples you interviewed. Any observations or connections there?
You know, when I was writing this story, as a writer, you have a tendency to sort of pre-compartmentalize, meaning you think, and this couple is going to be the happy story, and this is going to be the divorce story, and this is going to be the depressing story. You know, you just sort of do that as you lay it out in an outline. So there's a tendency to think that Kat and Larry would be the sad story. They have a child with a very rare genetic disorder or the genetic deletion. And so there's a tendency to think that they were going to be the sad story. And yet Kat is really one of the most joyous people I know. I mean, every day on Facebook, I see her posts, and she's laughing, and she's just a very, very joyous person. So I guess, you know, the obvious moral to the story is you just can never tell. If you would look at another couple, you know, Stuart and Stephanie were a beautiful couple, and because maybe it's just you just make these kind of assumptions, but I would have said, oh, they're going to be a beautiful, happy marriage. But instead, their marriage has sort of ended in a very bitter divorce. So you just never know.
I saw some of the photographs of Stephanie and Stuart absolutely glowing in their wedding portrait from 1999. You did photograph them again for this story. The difference is really striking. Can you tell us how you think things devolved for this couple?
There's a great little anecdote that I used in the story that is really telling. And it's so they were married in 1999. And then in 2008, I believe, Stuart suffered a brain aneurysm. And he was rushed to Washington Hospital Center. In the days that followed, he was conscious. They were prepping. They had to do a marathon surgery. And they were prepping for the surgery. And they were going through a routine pre-op, you know, a list of pre-op questions. And the doctor said, do you drink? And he said, no. And they said, do you do drugs? And they said, no. They said, do you smoke? And he said, well, you know, a pack a day. And Stephanie looked over at me when she was relating the story. And she said, I had no idea. Mm. And I said, oh, come on, Stephanie, how could you not know that your husband smoked? I mean, you know, his clothes must have. And she said, no, I really didn't have any idea that he was smoking that much or smoking at all. It was just a little thing, but it sort of foretold the beginning of the end. I mean, it wasn't necessarily the brain surgery, but it was the questions before the brain surgery that sort of clued them in that perhaps they just didn't know each other as well as they thought they knew each other. Mm. And this is after years and years of marriage.
And Stuart did actually survive after
the
surgery.
He did survive. He did.
But I guess the photographs that you'd made of them for their wedding was one of the casualties of this divorce.
Stuart and Stephanie, to their credit, were very kind to me in that both of them communicated to me throughout their ongoing separation and divorce proceedings. But at one point, Stephanie, right before the story was going to press, Stephanie emailed and said that Stuart, sort of in a fit of rage, had gone into their house and broken all the framed wedding pictures that I had taken back in 1999. You know, as a photographer, you have a sort of a gut reaction to that, which is, no, not my photograph. And then, of course, you realize that's sort of way down on the priority list. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to have to email Stuart and awkwardly ask him why he did it. And he said, you know what, I just couldn't look at them anymore. I just couldn't look at those pictures on my wall. And so, yeah, I broke them. And he apologized to me. He said, I'm sorry. I know they were your pictures. And I was like, oh, don't worry about it. But it was, you know, you realize that as a photographer, you're documenting, you know, these moments in lives, and those lives will change drastically from day one, the your day moment.
Matt Mendelsohn is with us. He's a writer. He's a professional photographer. He's photographed hundreds of weddings. And he went back and visited with five couples whose weddings he had photographed years before to find out what happened to them. As we're hearing, the changes are both unpredictable and bittersweet human experiences.
Exactly.
One of those that you also could never have predicted. One of the couples that you photographed never actually got legally married after the ceremony. Courtney and Stefan. And by the way, all of these names have been changed for anonymity. Tell us about this couple. What happened with them?
Well, they were married, and Courtney's mom long ago came out as a gay person. And she said that on their wedding day, her mom's gay friends joked with her, oh, you know you're marrying a gay man, don't you? And she said, oh, please, you know, he just, you know, dresses very neatly. She just said to me, I just can't believe I missed all of these warning signs. I mean, she said that they were not having intimate relations, and they were, you know, as she got deeper into their marriage, she realized something was amiss, and it became very clear what the amiss part was, and things went downhill from there.
I have a friend who was a couples therapist for a long time who said that she could tell pretty much in the first visit whether or not this couple was going to make it. Do you ever speculate about a couple's chances for a lasting marriage when you photograph their wedding?
I mean, I think we all do. I think not just the photographer, but every person who is a guest at the wedding is secretly doing the same thing.
Laying odds?
Not as a blood sport, but just sort of in the back of your mind, you wonder. I sort of giggle because I have a lot of Facebook friends who are fellow photographers, fellow wedding photographers. And so every Saturday, I see a stream of Facebook posts that say something to the effect of, "So honored to be shooting John and Stacy's wedding today." And I always say to myself, why are you honored? You don't really know them at all. You don't really know your clients, and you don't know whether they're going to be divorced or, you know, end up in a DEA drug raid, as one of my clients did, or dying, as some of my clients have done. You're just looking at them. They come into your studio for an hour or an hour and a half, and you instantly think, now they are my clients. They must all be great, and they must all be destined for a long, wonderful marriage. And It's kind of like shooting the coin flip before a football game and leaving and thinking, I've got enough. Well, that's just the coin flip. The game hasn't actually started yet. And so to make all these assumptions based on a one-hour meeting in your studio and a one-day wedding, you know, you're bound to be wrong.
How about what you produce, though, Matt? You're presenting people with an image of their best self or their projected best self, right? You know? And after reconnecting with these five couples, did you feel like the photographs that you made held more or less importance than you imagined when making them? Or did they play any role at all for the brides or grooms that they captured?
I think people love the pictures that I take, and I love the pictures that I make at their weddings, and I think they're important. I guess what the story was meant to do is to make people realize that you go in, let's say I go into a wedding and I shoot 5,000 frames, and those frames get edited down to 1,500 that the couple will see. And of those 1,500, they might choose 60 for a wedding album. And of those 60, one or two of them actually gets printed out and stuck into a 5x7 frame. That one picture out of that original 5,000 will really be the only one that stands the test of time, and that will be handed down over the years and left in an attic box and found by great-grandchildren. So for all of these thousands of pictures we as photographers take, it really becomes one image that will last 100 years or 200 years if we're all lucky. But, you know, I don't know.
Matt Mendelson, what a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Matt Mendelson, a writer, a professional photographer, and you can find a link to read his article for The Washingtonian. It's a terrific long-form piece called The Remains of the Day, and also see a slideshow of some of his photographs. That's all at wordofmouthradio.org. Kind of the season for objects and artifacts of sentimental value. Consider the Christmas ornament. We trundle them out every year and unpack our memories. Whether it's the tacky bulb from your childhood tree, your grandmother's crush, or your child's first paper snowflake, we would love to see yours. You can post a picture or even a story of your most treasured holiday ornament. Just hang it on our Facebook page, Word of Mouth Radio, or tweet it to us at Word of Mouth. And like your great aunt's fruitcake, we're not going anywhere. We'll be back tomorrow at 2 and again at 9, right here on NHPR and online anytime at wordofmouthradio.org.
Word of Mouth is produced by
Taylor Quimby,
Logan Shannon,
Bill Berry,
and Zach Nugent.
Our intern is
James Pouliot.
Digital support from Rebecca Lavoie
and Sarah Plord.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals
and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters.
To subscribe to our podcasts and listen to past shows,
go to wordofmouthradio.org.
You can also join us on Facebook and Tumblr at Word of Mouth Radio.
Follow us on Twitter at Word of Mouth.
And check out a playlist of music from the program on Spotify.
Word of Mouth
is a production
of New Hampshire Public Radio.
Thank you.